Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd turn sudoriferous if you made me sweat with the idea that you missed today's show. Your crowdfunding campaign. Most crowdfunding campaigns don't make goal. What are the common denominators for failure and success? Moishe Hecht answers all and shares his organizational readiness checklist to get you prepared for success. He's chief innovation officer at Charity. That's recorded at 19 NTC. And CRM plus email plus website. You'll learn more about the people engaging with you when your CRM, email, and website are integrated and talking to each other. We'll leave you with a plan for getting these technologies together. My guest, also from 19 NTC, is Isaac Shalev, president of Sage 70. On Tony's Take Two, show number 450. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, wegnercpas.com. By Cougar Mountain Software, Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution specifically for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. And by Turn 2 Communications, full-service strategic communications and PR, turn-2.co. Here is your crowdfunding campaign.
Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 19 NTC. That's the 2019 Nonprofit Technology Conference, and we are in Portland, Oregon at the Convention Center. All of our 19 NTC interviews are brought to you by our partners at ActBlue, free fundraising tools for helping nonprofits to make an impact. I'm joined now by Moishe Hecht. He is the Chief Innovation Officer at Charity, that's with a D. And his topic is why your crowdfunding campaign might fail and how to avoid it. Welcome, Moishe.
Thank you. Thank you, Tony, for having me.
Welcome to the show. It's a pleasure. Pleasure. What's the work at Charity?
So we are a crowdfunding platform and consulting service. So we help nonprofits run their giving days, crowdfunding campaigns, and we do the entire back office service for them. So we'll give them the platform, and then we will give them a team of marketing specialists and fundraising consultants to help them succeed in their crowdfunding campaigns.
Okay, so your first step in making sure your crowdfunding campaign doesn't fail might be to engage Charity.
That's right.
Oh man, what a free promo. I just gave you 13,000 plus listeners, and I'm not going to charge you. You didn't ask for it, so I'm not going to. Okay, it should be pretty simple. You got a lot of ideas, a lot of reasons why these things might, I'm over-modulating, why these things might fail. Give us some stats. Most do. By fail, you mean not make goal, I presume. Let's define our terms. Is that,
yeah, so that's,
is
that's
that a failure?
Yeah, that's a great way to start.
Failure.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So the industry would you know, measures it by, you know, you set a campaign goal and then you don't reach your campaign goal. And that has about a 2/3 of campaigns don't succeed across crowdfunding. It's a very broad metric. If you go a little deeper into, let's say, personal cause crowdfunding campaigns, success rate is actually much lower than that. When you go into nonprofits, they're a little bit higher. You go into creative campaigns for, let's say, businesses and products. They'll be somewhere, depending what platform, some say 44% success rate, some are lower. It's not great. The success rate is not great, and mostly judged by reaching the goal. Now, in our talk, I spoke about a different metric, which is probably a more accurate and more helpful metric of what failure means. Okay, so if you think about it and you try to zone in on what are the essential difference between let's call modern crowdfunding and, you know, just a classic fundraising, okay? So before modern crowdfunding came in, it had some really, you know, great ways to fundraise, right? Direct mail,
yeah, yeah.
Face-to-face solicitations, events, and then even email marketing as of late and social media marketing as of late. These are all great tools to fundraise and to get in front of people and to engage and solicit donations. In my view and in my experience, the essential core difference of why you would, okay, do a crowdfunding campaign, if you got all those other options, is that when you set out to do a crowdfunding campaign, essentially what you're trying to accomplish is to hit a tipping point. That the crowdfunding campaign will be so effective that it reaches a threshold, and over that threshold, it reaches a certain momentum that you don't need to push it anymore. Mm-hmm. And it has a life of its own. Right? So think about some of the most, you know, popular crowdfunding campaigns that we know about.
What do we call this when you have your pioneers, your early adopters, and then you reach a
early majority.
Tipping point.
Yeah, that's right.
Tipping point. Okay. Thank you. Malcolm Gladwell.
Malcolm Gladwell. Yes. Okay, yes. So it's funny you mentioned that. My entire talk is based the sort of the narrative that we've created for the presentation to make it a little bit, you know, easier to understand is I base it on the Malcolm Gladwell book.
Oh, okay.
On the fundamentals. And that book came out in, you know, in 2000 or 19 years later. That the fundamentals of that book are still very true and can be used as an analogy what it takes to reach a tipping point. And that's really what you're setting out to do, because otherwise, just go to classic other ways. Just why put in the work and the effort to try to do a crowdfunding campaign?
For every single...
Exactly.
You got to start using direct mail to get people to donate to your crowdfunding campaign. Why don't you just write a letter, a solicitation letter?
Exactly.
Every single dollar is a struggle.
Right. Yeah. So the possibilities is really what, you know, of this, you know, uber connected world, this worldwide web of goodness and kindness that we live in, the possibilities of hitting a tipping point, of having the campaign go well beyond your own abilities to take on a life of its own is really what we're trying to accomplish. So I would say that there's actually, if you use that metric as failure, it's actually a lot more than 2/3%.
Right. It's just that's harder to measure.
Right.
We'd have to really do granular analysis of what lots of campaigns and how they trended and over what period of time. Okay. But if you apply that measure, I'm sure
it's not great.
Stats are much worse, less than a third succeeding. Okay. What's the best way to just dive in and say, all right, what's the number one? I thought of something after all. What's the number one reason campaigns fail?
So there isn't one reason.
Number one. What's the top reason? It's got to be a top reason.
So
there's many of them. Yeah.
Well,
what do you see most?
I would say probably the top, if I had to choose a top reason, is a lack of preparation.
Yeah, I'm asking you to.
Yeah.
Lack of preparation.
Lack of preparation.
You didn't have the infrastructure set up.
Right.
Up front. Okay.
Correct.
What do we do to, what do you need to do up front?
Very good. So.
look at you leading me through the topic.
Didn't you see the questions I gave you before?
Wishy heck, nonprofit radio.
So, Tony, tell me.
It's time for a break. Wegner CPAs, they're accountants. You know what they do? For goodness sake, you've heard me say this. You know what CPAs do? CPAs, certified public accountants. Do you need one? Do you need a firm? You need a couple. Whatever you need, you know what they do. Check them out first at WegnerCPAs.com. And then you know what to do after that. Pick up the phone, talk to Yeet Uchtum, the partner. He'll tell you whether Wegner CPAs can help you. WegnerCPAs.com. Now back to Moshe Hecht and your crowdfunding campaign.
So that's actually a good question. What's the number one reason? Yeah, lack of preparation. I think we see a lot of crowdfunding campaigns.
It looks
out
easy,
there.
Right?
It looks an accident.
I do a 30-second selfie video.
Right.
I go on to Kickstarter or GoFundMe according to what my intentions are, what my goal is, what I'm raising money for, and then people just come.
Right.
Like we thought about websites in 1992.
Right.
Build it and everybody will come to it.
Yeah. Not going to happen. Yeah. Doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So there are a few core ingredients that need to go. It's a new set
upfront.
Of...
We're talking about
upfront.
Prep time. Yeah. Infrastructure.
And these are, I would say, these are fresh tools that nonprofits need to learn. Okay. And maybe individually, some of them are, you know, classic tools, but combining them together is really where the magic happens. The glue that brings them all together, that creates that, you know, sort of velocity that helps a campaign take off. Those two, and these are, and why I say they're fresh tools are because they're, you know, they are, these are, this is possible. I believe, like, you know, we hear a lot of saying like, oh, you know, don't try to do a, you know, ice bucket challenge for your organization, right? It's just not realistic. And that's actually, you know, it's, if a consultant would tell you that, I would say, yeah, he's looking out for you. He's not trying to set you up for, you know, unrealistic expectations. But I have a bit of a different view, and the way my experience on what I do for a living is, we actually work to reverse engineer an ice bucket challenge and say, what were the ingredients that went into the ice bucket challenge, even though it happened by accident.
Yeah, organic.
Okay, organically. Yeah. It's not like someone came together and was like, all right, we're going to raise $150 million, and we're going to get the entire world, plus the president and Bill Gates, everything. Here's the plan. Follow the blueprint. Do it.
But ALS had some things in place.
Right. Well, so...
Not with this intention.
So I would say studying it doesn't matter, meaning... whether the things happened by accident or they happened with intention, it doesn't matter. Just study what were those things.
They were in place. No, I understand that. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so
I was just making it clear that they didn't set them up with the intention of
exactly.
an ice bucket, because that's contrary to what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
So what we've done
get
is...
Get into it. What are they? What are they already?
So, number one, let's go through Malcolm Gladwell.
Okay.
Number one is the power of the few. Okay. So... we know about, you know, the power of few, 80-20 rule when it comes to fundraising, right? 80% of your money is coming from 20% of your people. 20% of, 20% of your people should be giving 80% of your money, right? And we use this as a methodology for fundraising. Rarely do we use it as a methodology for volunteer engagement and for soliciting people to become ambassadors and influencers for your organization, where we say, okay, well, if we're trying to get to the masses, we should just engage with the masses.
Yeah.
But... the reality is that it works the same way with volunteer engagement and getting people to advocate for your organization. Is first find the power of the few, find the power of those, you know, call them the
influencers. Your power.
Exactly.
They have power on social media.
Exactly. So Gladwell breaks it down into three different types of people: connectors, mavens, and salespeople. Right. So today we call them influencers. Right. And but influencers have varying degrees of these attributes, you know. So a connector is like, you know, you go into a party and you're like, you know, oh, how'd you get here? Oh, Laura, you know, she invited me too. You know, you walk through the room, you realize like Laura basically was like had something to do with everyone and invited to the party, right?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
You're going to a conference in Portland, and then, you know, oh, you have to meet Laura. She's going to be there. You got to meet Tony. You got to get on a show. You know, like everyone's on a show. Like these are connectors. Tony,
that's not a hypothetical.
No. That's real.
That's
Tony, you're a connector.
That's real.
Yeah. And you're also maybe even be a maven, maybe even a salesperson.
Might be a salesperson. Oh my God, I'm disgusting.
You're a maven first.
All right. Oh, I'm just everything. Oh, I don't want to say I'm a whore. I'm just everything. Oh my God.
There's crossover, right? Some people can be like a professional at something and they're also a bit of a connector, but essentially it's influencers, right? But influencers, you know, today we know them as influencers and they're like, okay, Instagram influencers, they become formalized and formulated into an actual career, right? But it's not just the professional influencers.
So we got to move this along because you have a lot of tips. We're only on the first one.
So number two.
I do want to go a little deeper on this before we leave it. But I'm directing you that we got to. I want to get specific. What do you do with these influencers? First, you got to identify them.
Yeah.
There are companies that can help you sort through all your social contacts if you give them your email. Maybe charity does that. I don't know. But,
well, it's easier
you
than
enough, I've given you enough of a free promo, so I'm not going to say. I'm not going to let you say whether you do it or not. Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. You can go to charity.com. I'm sure you can find out. Beyond that, so you've identified your influencers. What do you do before your campaign?
You empower them to be a springboard and a messaging board for your organization. So say you're a school, okay, and you identify an educator in the community, right, who's a maven in the community. He also happens to be a parent, right? And you engage with that person and say, listen, we're doing a campaign and we're raising money for this and this new program, and you happen to be a professional in this program. We'd love for you to get onto a video and talk about, like, yes, this program really deserves the funding that is being asked for. And among all the noise that's happening through all the solicitations and asking, this is going to rise to the tide because you're getting that trust and that gravitas from this professional who's going to bring your message to the forefront. So you want to identify them, you want to empower them, engage with them, and ask them to become advocates for your campaign. Now, if they're first, so they're really carrying the message forward, right? The connectors are like, just by posting it on Twitter today or posting it on Instagram or putting it on a WhatsApp group or something, they're naturally connecting or they're going to an event, right? The mavens are giving, you know, weight and trust to the conversation. Salespeople are creating persuasive reasons why you should give, and you should give more and give even more. You line these people up strategically, you're going to have a much greater chance of success.
All right. How far in advance?
Great question. So it happens in
only took 14 minutes for
yes.
a decent question.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
How much time
13.
Do
we had a lot of banter in advance. We got another 10, okay. Maybe 12 if I feel generous.
It happens.
How far?
So
yeah.
we do it. So we do it in stages. So what's really important with crowdfunding campaign is keeping the momentum going. So you don't want to, you know, start preparing a campaign several months before, and then you lose interest and you lose momentum, right?
Okay.
Because it's like a plane.
Far.
It's like a plane taking off, right? So they're usually the first people that you would reach out to.
But before you go public.
Before you go public,
yeah.
Right? So you'd reach out to
Give
them
a couple of weeks before.
Yeah, a couple of weeks before. You know, if I'm dealing with a school, we do some with universities, so it'd be like, let's say 2 months before the campaign. You want to give them preparation. You want to have them prepare their message. You want to.
Yeah.
Have them, you know, they're going to go out and they're going to speak on behalf of the school. They're going to have questions. They're going to want to, you know, curate and really define their message appropriately.
Well, yeah, a university or school, that's a bigger bureaucracy too.
Yeah.
So some of their messaging may have to be approved or something, you know, so. But
precisely.
But a smaller mid-sized shop, well, college could be, university could be a mid-sized. Small shop, you don't need to be 2 months out in advance with
I'll give you an example.
With your influencers.
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. We did a campaign. We ran a campaign for YU in New York, Yeshiva University.
Yeah.
And this was about 3 years ago. We've done one recently also, but the first one that we did, the slogan was I Am YU. And Lin-Manuel Miranda was actually an honorary graduate of Yeshiva University. So we engaged with him for a video several weeks before. But then the video only launched the day before. So it's about lining up that strategy.
You decided that would be a nice shot.
Exactly.
Nice shot to get you started.
Now, every campaign's not going to have a Lin-Manuel Miranda, but that's, you know, kind of an example of someone finding people who have that broad appeal and that broad network to be able to, you know, take your message further.
All right. What else do we have to have in place in advance?
So...
that's right. We're only on the in advance stage. We're not even into the, and we have like 10 minutes left. So
yes.
We got to.
So the second thing is really
taking
messaging very serious. So
wait, are we still in preparation?
Yeah, we're. It's so. So I'll tell you, Tony.
Oh, everything.
Everything happens in preparation stage.
Oh, okay.
If you and when I always say that, it's like once your campaign starts, it's already over. There's nothing you can do about it once it starts. You know, once it starts, you just if you're waiting for it to start for it to be successful, you're gonna lose all your friends. Okay.
Yeah,
because you're just going to be harassing people like throughout
that's
the campaign.
That's the beating down the door for every dollar.
So we don't want that. That's not the outcome that we're trying to.
Okay.
It's all
preparation.
It all happens before.
All right,
if you really wanted to, you know, take off.
Okay.
Yeah. So the second thing is just taking your messaging very seriously. And you know, Gladwell talks about it, compares it to like, you know, the stickiness factor. You can have good messaging or you can have messaging that actually sticks. Right, so going to the depth of your cause and your appeal, and really defining the truth and the essence of what you're trying to say, but then churning that into a bite-sized, you know, congestible message that has legs.
All
okay,
right. Right.
And a message that is going to be memorable, easily, you know, big headlines. I'll be able to, you know, the think different, the open happiness, you know, those type of messaging. It works wonders. In crowdfunding, and it's so important because, you know, the distance between your message and your conversion is actually really, really close. You know, you're going on social media and you're saying, you know, getting to the core of an organization and really getting to the heart of the organization and making a real beautiful, you know, well-positioned ask, right? You can see a conversion instantly.
It should be just moments.
Instantly.
Yeah.
And that's why
it's
so important, right? So 20 years ago when you had a great message, you were doing a billboard, you couldn't really measure the results in the conversion of the billboard. Well, you have X amount of eyes walking down, X amount of time. Today, messaging is so much more critical. You can't mess with that because it's like there's so much you can gain with a better message. People are going to see something that's really going to be compelling. They're going to take action.
And you're going to have feedback immediately.
Instantly.
Okay.
And that's also good with testing. So you can text messages. You can test messages quickly. You can tweak messages quickly.
Okay.
Third.
Messaging.
Yeah. Messaging.
Third is
what Gladwell talks about is the power of context. Okay? So context is it the right timing? Is it the right environment? Is it the right mood? Is, you know, it's social. Are people prepared for it, right? So on a practical level, you know, the do's and the don'ts of timing, right? So, for a typical organization, you know, you want to think about, okay, December's a great month, you know, year-end fundraising. I want to time up and lead my fundraising, my crowdfunding campaign to happen year-end.
Yeah.
Line it up with year-end funding. It's not a conflict. Yeah. It should be leveraged year-end fundraising thing, right? If you're a religious organization, it should be before the holidays, right? Tied to the holidays where people are in the mood of giving, or tied around Christmas where people in the giving season. So timing is really, really important. And then in the don'ts, you know,
we could time it around Passover.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, so okay. The Passover's coming up soon. It's a great time. We have a lot of campaigns happening before.
You didn't have to use Christmas just because I have a Catholic name.
Yeah, right? I was trying.
Oh, no.
Come on, Tony.
Pandering. You're pandering. It's unnecessary. See, I called you out. You're pandering.
Listen.
Martinetti sounds Catholic. I'll call out Christmas. Go ahead.
I'm from New York. You're Jewish or Christian, you're celebrating Christmas. Yeah, you know, it's everywhere. You can't get away from it, you know?
I've heard that, yes.
My kids are still wondering why they don't have a Christmas tree. They're not getting it. It's just everywhere, you know. You know, it's interesting. Before this company I worked for, my brother started a virtual currency company. This was 2012.
A virtual what?
Virtual currency.
Currency. Oh, really? Yeah. 2012?
Yeah.
Oh, my right? God.
No one
Pioneer.
Knew, yeah. No one, yeah.
Too early.
Way ahead.
Way
ahead.
Way very ahead. Bright guy's got bad timing.
It was way ahead. He was just too much of a visionary. Way ahead.
Right.
So you're
right.
Talking about, and there's actually have been in the last 6 months, I've actually seen already three businesses that have almost the exact identical business model to what he created and what we were trying to create then. Genius, brilliant, nothing, bad timing. Right.
I mean, but these other three have taken off.
There's movement. There's a whole ecosystem today of virtual currencies today. So, timing is really, really important. You know, are you coming out with your message where the environment is ready for it? Right. Look at remember the immigration campaign that happened.
You gonna let your brother listen to this?
Oh yeah, sure.
Does he know?
I've already wrote that.
Does he know how he left?
Yeah, I wrote about this. I threw him under the bus.
He knows how he ruined your
life. It's actually
a
good thing for him. It's you know, it's he's a genius. You know, he's too smart.
He's got no timing. Genius with no timing. It's no good. You can't invent the car now.
Right. Exactly.
You know, yeah. All right.
You remember the campaign, the Facebook crowdfunding campaign that raised like $35 million for the immigration organization in D.C. It was a $35 million crowdfunding.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, it was a $35 million crowdfunding campaign. That organization before that campaign struggled to reach $1 million a year of fundraising. They didn't even have a budget of more of $1 million a year.
Yeah.
Here they are, the timing with the entire immigration fiasco that's going on. Someone launches a campaign on their behalf, or they launched it. I'm not exactly sure who launched it. Within weeks, $35 million from tens of thousands of people. You know, and you should, you know, it's not about being an ambulance chaser. You don't want to start taking advantage of situations, but you should be looking out for
opportune
times.
No, that's not ambulance chasing. That's grabbing a hook.
Exactly.
I mean, if there's immigration news and you're in the immigration space, I think if you don't grab a hook, you risk being irrelevant. I mean, and I've had guests who've said that, and I believe it myself. I just repeat everything guests.
Yeah,
I bring smart people.
You don't have any knowledge of your own.
No, I just have a good memory.
Yeah,
that's all.
Right.
All right, let's move on. We only have a couple minutes left, like three or four. So, more things. Preparation, Moshe, please.
So I'll tell you. Great. So you have so let's say you line up all these ingredients, right? And you line up the power of the few. You get your influencers lined up to really help you. And you got amazing messaging, right? And then you have the timing's perfect, right? You got this all set up, right?
Our odds are improving.
What you're missing right now is that's not enough.
No, okay? Not sufficient.
What you're missing here is velocity. Okay, so take a plane as takeoff, right?
Guys, watch went off.
Yeah. Take a plane.
I put mine on airport mode, airplane mode for you. If I can get the same courtesy. Oh, he put it in his pocket,
Tony,
but he still
Tony.
Didn't put it.
Tony,
he still did not
Tony,
put it in airplane.
You only gave me 30 minutes.
Didn't put it in airplane mode yet. He just stuck in his pocket, so it's still going to vibrate. All right.
So take a plane, right? It has to reach a certain speed within a certain amount of space, within a certain amount of time for it to actually take off.
Yes,
to take lift
off. You need,
velocity.
Velocity and and lift in the and the upper wings. You need
high pressure
above low
exactly.
pressure below.
Right.
Okay.
So all that scientific stuff. But the point is that you need these things to happen within a specific amount of time for it to be able to create that combustion for it to actually take off.
Yes.
Right? To be able to hit the tipping point.
Yes.
Okay. So I'll give you an example of what things we see that people are usually doing wrong that can improve on is that you know, yesterday at the at my talk, I asked someone, like, you know, who's been involved in a crowdfunding campaign, a peer-to-peer campaign, for example. And one person said me, okay. And I said, look, well, tell me how it went. And she said, they called me up, they sent me an email, and then there was an event or thing, and they said, you know, would you take on a campaign, you know, a page to raise $3,600 for the organization?
Right.
And she said, well, yes. Okay, and then when was the end? When was the when was the campaign culminating? 4 months. So is the worst 4 months of her life.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you need much less time than you think you do, right? You think more time equals more money. No.
No. Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
Less time equals more money because, you know, people are just inundated with so much information. And if you have the right ingredients to motivate the person to say, yes, I'll give, right? With by telling them, you know, whether you, let's say you put a matching component on the campaign, right? Where you say, okay, in this limited amount of time, your money will be matched, right?
Right.
Or you put it, you have a certain goal that you have to reach within a certain amount of time.
Create
that urgency, that impact, that recognition when everybody's going to be recognizing the campaign. You have all those ingredients and you have the right messaging and you have the right people pushing it and the context is right. You need very, very little time to actually take off. The majority of our campaigns happen in 24, 36 hours. Millions are being raised in 24, 36 hours with weeks of preparation. So if you want to hit a tipping point, you can't have, you know, miles of runway. You'll never take off. You'll drive right off the runway and that's it.
Right.
So shorten the runway and prepare the ingredients that you need, as we just mentioned, but tighten.
That should all be done in the maintenance hangar.
Exactly.
Airplane analogy, in case that wasn't obvious.
Yeah. No. We're feeding off, Tony. We're feeding off each other.
It's done in manufacturing. I mean, you go way back, but it's done in maintenance. Maintenance and cleaning. Yes. Okay. All right. I can give you another minute. You got, can I? Yeah. You got one more thing? You want to wrap it up? You want to, without mentioning charity.com, you want to summarize or you want to give another tip?
Yeah, no. Listen, I'm here today, and I don't do a lot of the you know conferences, but it's fantastic to be here. I think the N10 conference is really nice. You know, some of them are like way big, and there's not a lot of too big to have too much conversations, and then there's too small.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this is a really, really nice size, the N10 conference. I've met a lot of wonderful people here, a lot of people doing a lot of innovative stuff in the space. It's encouraging to be here to see a lot of people working towards the same goal.
Yeah. All right. We're going to leave it there.
That's it. Thank you, Tony, for having me.
Actually, don't walk away yet. Your phone is your watch is buzzing. He's Moshe Hecht. He's the Chief Innovation Officer at Charity, Charidy. That's enough shout-outs for that. And you are with Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 19NTC, the 2019 Nonprofit Technology Conference, Portland, Oregon. All of our 19NTC interviews are brought to you by our partners at ActBlue, free fundraising tools to help nonprofits make an impact. Thanks for being with us.
We need to take a break. Cougar Mountain Software. Maintaining separate accounts for each fund, managing daily expenses, and reporting to the board are all challenging. That's why Cougar Mountain created Denali Fund. Denali Fund, a complete accounting solution specifically designed for nonprofits. You know, like the park, Denali. They have a free 60-day trial at tony.ma/cougarmountain. Denali, of course, is also a mountain, but it's a park and a mountain. Denali Fund. tony.ma/cougarmountain. Now, time for Tony's Take Two. The 450th Nonprofit Radio is July 26th. Yes, we've been at this 9 years times 50 shows. There you go. Who's going to be with us? Scott Stein, of course. Live music. You got to have Scott and his 88 singing our theme song, Cheap Red Wine, live in the studio. Of course, our creative producer, Claire Meyerhoff, live in the studio. Call-ins from all our contributors. Giveaways. Yes, giveaways. I'm sure we'll have Cura Coffee, the coffee owned by the dentist that provides dental care for coffee growers and coffee workers as you buy their bags of coffee. They're a sponsor of the 450th. We'll be giving away some bags of Cura coffee. Always great fun. We'll have some comedic thing. It's too early to tell. You don't need to know at this point. If I told you, you'd forget anyway. So just be tuned in for the 450th, and you'll see what we're doing, we're giving away, and what we put together. All right? That's it. That's Tony's Take Two. Now, here is CRM plus email plus website.
Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 19NTC. That's the 2019 Nonprofit Technology Conference coming to you from the Convention Center in Portland, Oregon. All of our 19NTC interviews are brought to you by our partners at ActBlue, free fundraising tools to help nonprofits make an impact. With me now is Isaac Shalev. He is president at Sage 70, and his topic is solving the CRM plus email plus website equation. Isaac, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me, Tony.
Real pleasure. You have a real radio voice. You have a good podcast voice.
I should start one.
You have one. No, you have one already, right?
Yeah, I'm cheating. I do. I've been podcasting for a few years on a totally different topic.
Well, shout out your podcast. What is it?
My podcast is called On Board Games, and it's about board games. So head over to onboardgames.net to check it out.
Okay. Wonderful. Is that obviously a part-time passion of yours, board games?
I design board games on the side.
Oh, you design them?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was going to ask you, do you talk more about classic or contemporary games?
We mostly talk about contemporary games. We talk about the games industry, which is exploding these days. We feature interviews with industry guests and talk about what's happening at conventions and things like that.
That's what's fabulous about podcasting, the niche, a board games podcast.
Yeah, you can go all the way down the rabbit hole in a podcast, and there's somebody down there listening.
Doing it, yes, whatever it is, yeah. All right, let's do our equation. So what's the problem here?
Well, I think it's an opportunity, really, more than a problem. The opportunity is to be able to know more about the people who are engaged in your mission, whether that's donors who are coming to your website to learn more about you or who are reading your emails because they want to know more about the work that you're doing, or whether it's program participants who you want to track as they go through your programs. You want to be able to, wherever somebody touches you, know and track and engage them, which means you need a database that can store all that engagement information, but you also need connections between where the engagement happens, right? When you send an email, you need to know who opened the email in order to track that they opened it and cared about it.
Yes.
Same thing with the web. When somebody visits your website, you want to know that they came and what they clicked on. That's going to help you communicate with them about the parts of your work that they care most about. So that's the promise of CRM when it's integrated with email and with a website. The technical challenge is enormous, though, because these are different systems by different vendors and different underlying technology, and making them connect is not trivial. So we've spent the last 15 years working on this, and we're getting there. We're getting closer and closer each year.
Are the vendors cooperating with each other?
I think that over time we've seen a few cycles of how this kind of works. So initially we had a lot of unbundled services. You had your website, and your website was, I mean, even this, think about the pre-WordPress days, right? When people were spinning up websites on bare code, and you had databases that didn't even talk to the web. I mean, if you were working with earlier versions of Razor's Edge or Donor Perfect, they didn't have any connection to the web at all. That's changed a lot, and now there are all-in-one systems. Neon is a vendor that's pretty popular in that space that provide content management systems as well as email marketing platforms as part of the core CRM database offering. But you can still do it lots of other ways, and enterprise solutions are often more of a, let me pick the best in breed for each service I want and then integrate through APIs. And that can be very powerful, but it's challenging not on just the technical level, but on the training. You need to train staff to be able to use multiple different systems, and you need governance. You need somebody to oversee how different systems connect and make sure that the right pieces of data move to the right places.
Yeah, there's a lot to this. All right.
Well, that's why we called it an equation. You know, we're straightforward. There's some math here.
Yeah. All right. APIs, let's just make that clear. We have Jargon Jail on Nonprofit Radio.
Ah, you've trapped me in Jargon Jail.
So I didn't trap you. You were free for rolling, not free rolling.
I walked right in and slammed the door.
Okay, I know that an API is like it's a call from one to another, but you I don't know what it stands for. And you can define it better than I can.
So an API is a way in which one system defines how it wants to be spoken to by another system.
Okay.
So when you use an API, what you're doing is you're sort of saying, I want to move information like your name and your email address from my website where I captured it in a form to my CRM so that I can see if maybe you've been a donor, and I can add an engagement record. I can add a touch point to your record. So my CRM will say, oh, that's great. If you want to pass me information, send it to me in a file that looks like this. Right, so send it to me with, in column one, put the name, and in column two, put the email, and package that into a, you know, an XHTML file or whatever it is, and send that to me. That's basically what an API is. It's how to structure data so that you can move it from one system to another.
Okay. Does it stand for something, API?
Yeah, it stands for Automatic Program Interface, I believe. I'm not sure about the A.
Okay. Program Interface makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there an advantage to open source versus proprietary in terms of the three working together? If you're all open source, are you more likely to have compatibility or not?
I don't think that you necessarily will have more compatibility. What's true is that open source products were more committed to an open standard, so they were more committed to offering APIs that allows data to move in and out of systems.
Oh, okay.
And there were a lot of, and there remain a lot of vendors who don't yet have fully open APIs. In some cases, like Blackbaud has been spending quite a bit of time developing their Sky API that promises to allow open access, but the reality is that if you're sitting in Razor's Edge 7, it's hard to move data in and out because there aren't really open APIs. So yes, if you were in an open source system, you probably had access to open APIs on at least one side of things. I think generally that modular architecture, that idea that the product that I'm building should allow data to move in and out, has become more broadly embraced no matter what. And open source products have faded, I think, in their relevance to the nonprofit space over the last few years. So Civi CRM is no longer a leading CRM product in the market.
What about Salesforce? Salesforce is open source, isn't it?
Salesforce is a proprietary
system.
It is
proprietary?
Yeah, Salesforce is owned by the Salesforce company.
Yeah, I know. I thought I had somebody say that it was open source.
Salesforce has open APIs. So let's define the difference here. Open source means that the code that the product was written in is available to anyone.
Like Firefox.
Right.
Mozilla makes Firefox available.
Mozilla is an open source. Right. Yeah. So you can take that code, you can do whatever you want to it, you don't have to pay anyone for it, and that's what open source means. Salesforce, on the other hand, has open APIs, which means...
Yeah, how could that be open source? That couldn't be
no,
open source.
No, of course not. You have to pay Salesforce
for... It's a corporation.
Yeah.
All right.
So yeah, but you do want to look for that, right? You do want to look
with a lackluster host. Sorry, I'm the only one. It's Tony Martin at Nonprofit Radio, unfortunately. It's not somebody else's Nonprofit Radio. You're stuck here. Okay, so yes, maybe it was open API. Maybe that's what I misunderstood.
Right. The trick is also that you have to be really concerned about the word API, because there are a lot of folks out there saying we have APIs. And they're not wrong. They do have APIs, but they may not be opening all of the different tables in the database to you. So you may want to track information in your CRM that you can't pull from another system because, for example, you might have an email system where you can pull whether a person opened a specific email and whether they clicked on a specific email, but maybe you can't pull which email they unsubscribed from. That's just not an available thing to pull from their API. So you've got some functionality, but when you made the decision, oh, they have an API, let's use them, you might not have been aware of the limitations.
API doesn't
mean all the data can move easily. And you really need to explore and make sure by examining the API documentation.
You've got to dive down
to
know that it's going to share with you the with your other system the information that you're expecting to carry over.
Right. I mean, you can imagine a donor system saying they have open APIs, so you could pull everybody's name and email address, but not how much they donated. That's not super helpful, but you could still describe it as an open API.
Okay. Okay, good. Thank you. You straightened me out. I'm trainable.
Stick with me, buddy.
I'm trainable, yeah. learning about databases of records, APIs, integration methods, a plan for getting these technologies to talk to one another. So we have you done your session yet?
I'll be doing my session tomorrow.
Okay.
But it's a repeat. I did it last year.
Oh, you did? Oh, I didn't capture you last year.
No.
I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe I think I was doing a session at the time that you offered to me.
Okay.
You really got the scheduling.
Or maybe I invited you and you turned me down. That's possible, too. We invite more than we fill.
It's possible. It's possible. Yeah. I'm glad to be here this year.
Yeah, I'm glad you are, too. Thank you for coming this year.
Well, I've been listening for a long time, so I'm excited to have a chance to be on the other end of the mic.
Thank you. I'm glad. Okay, so
well, why don't we talk a little bit about
the fact that you've been listening for so long and gratified to be a guest.
Well, I was going to suggest that we talk a little bit about how today the need for integration is even greater because our stakeholders expect us to know everything, right? When you come to an organization, you expect them to know whether you've been to an event or whether you were engaged in a particular cause. There's just no separation from the perspective of a donor or of a stakeholder between the different departments within an organization.
Yeah.
You know, you call
up. And a lot of that expectation is driven by our experience in e-commerce.
For sure.
By very smart companies like Zappos, Amazon, and maybe even by some smart charities that have raised the bar. So now we're expecting, why don't you have the same, you have access to the same technology they do if you're willing to invest in it. So the bar is higher, you know, step up your game.
Absolutely. And fairly, right? In that we keep preaching the importance of working with each individual and segmenting our communication so that everyone feels a personal connection. And if you're going to talk that game, when the donor calls, you better know who they are. And that means that you need someone at that phone in front of a terminal where they can type in a name and see the full view of what this person has done with your organization.
Yeah.
So the stakes are rising in terms of being able to do this. And the means by which we do it keep multiplying, right? We have more and more channels. So it used to be that we were just doing direct mail, and then we did email, and then we did text to give, and now we have peer-to-peer platforms. We have so many more ways in which we're engaging. And usually, it's another vendor, it's another system, it's another database through which we add this functionality. Then a couple of years go by and some CRM pulls that functionality in and you get increased functionality within your core system.
So how are we going to make this happen, though? I mean, you obviously have to have expertise to do this,
mm-hmm.
to have these cross-platform communications.
So one big tip. Here's, if you listen to nothing else in this interview, I want everyone to walk away with this one big idea.
Right.
Have a network map. A network map is a map that shows all the different systems that you have and arrows pointing to which system pushes data into which place. And this doesn't sound that complicated, and the reality is it's not hard to do. You list all your systems, and then you draw your arrows, and when you're drawing your arrows, just indicate whether it's an automatic move of data or whether it's manual. Are you downloading the spreadsheet and uploading it to a new system? That's manual. Is there an API? Is there an integration that does it without you having to do anything? Automatic. Just make that map. And now you have an opportunity, right? Because now you can see, where are your manual processes? Maybe there's something you can do about that.
Yeah.
Where are your automated ones? And also, you know, you don't want to trip over yourself. You can create loops, right, where one system updates the next one and the next one and the next one, and then they circle back. And making a map avoids that trouble. So that's the first step in thinking through a problem like this, is make the map and figure out what's in the middle. What's your database of record? Where are you going to collect all that data? And if you don't have one, that's your first mission.
Or if there's nothing at your core?
If you don't have a database of record, if you don't have the place where you keep all the data, you really don't have a way to centralize.
Time for our last break. Turn to communications. Full service strategic communications and PR for nonprofits. Turn 2 helps you tell compelling stories, advocate for your cause, and make a difference through media relations, content marketing, communications, and branding strategy. They're at turn-2.co, not .com, .co. Now, here's back to buttloads more time, of course, for CRM plus email plus website.
There's some new methods for dealing with kind of cross-platform stuff. You've got all these tools, and you're trying to be able to see through and across all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have heard folks talking about data warehousing.
Yes.
Data warehousing sounds kind of, I don't know, futuristic in some ways, but futuristic in the most boring way, right? We didn't get flying cars, we got data warehouses. But a data warehouse is basically pouring every other database that you have into one big database. But you don't have that database do anything, right? And so in other words, it doesn't deliver emails, it doesn't do any transactions.
But you can query from it.
Right.
Yes. And
so then you can query across all your different systems, And so you say, find me the person who received these three emails, who donated at least $100 over the last year, and who cares about owls.
And they live in New Jersey.
Perfect. Yeah. Right? And I can, even though that data lives in multiple databases.
That's a complex query.
Right. But if you can make that query, right, then you can send that email that says, who gives a hoot? And that person in New Jersey is going to open that email.
All right. So now you've sold me on the value of a data warehouse. How do you create such a thing?
Well, data warehouses are created mostly with open source tools, actually. So a lot of times you take a MySQL database and you use APIs to pull in data from all your different systems. Sometimes you have to download stuff and upload stuff. I mean, there's data extraction, transformation, and loading processes, ETLs, that go along with that. But the key is that you need, and I say key because it really is about what's called a primary key. In a database, every line, every row in that database is represented by a unique identifier.
Something has to be unique.
Right. And the trouble is that every system
that
has
information
its
systems.
Own.
My information systems degree from Carnegie Mellon.
It's paying off.
Well, it's also antiquated.
But, you know, as antiquated as it is, that was true in 84 and it's true in 2019.
There has to be a unique identifier to each row.
Right. And when there is such a unique identifier, then you can really make the magic happen. The trouble is when you push three different databases into one, each database had its own unique identifier. So you, Tony Martinetti, are 128 in this database and you're 396 in that database and you're 425
in
the
third
one.
I'm in the donor database, I'm in the employee database, or et cetera.
So we need to create a fourth unique identifier in the warehouse that identifies you across those three systems. So there's some work to do, and that's why we recommend that nonprofits do work with experts around this, because data warehousing can be complex to get off the ground, but it has incredible returns in terms of the transparency and visibility of your most valuable data across multiple systems. So this means that you don't have to take everyone's favorite system away from them, or the system that you just spent a whole bunch of money implementing. You don't have to get rid of it because it doesn't integrate with that system. You can keep everyone working with the tools they love while still creating transparent information and reporting for decision makers.
Okay. And I'm going to guess that Sage 70 will help you with this?
So what Sage 70 will do is help you assess your digital infrastructure. What are all the tools that you're using? Are they well integrated? Do you have the right staff and skills to leverage them? A lot of times, you know, the trouble that you have is not your tool doesn't work. The trouble that you have is at strategy. You're not sure what you're trying to achieve or how to measure it. Or it's at skills. You know what you're trying to achieve. You just don't have the people who can do it. Or they're structured poorly. You've got them scattered across different departments and they're not effective and you need to centralize them. Whatever it might be, the tool itself is usually relatively far down the list. And that's because we're in 2019 and we're lucky. A lot of the tools have gotten a lot better. There's been a lot of feature convergence. So any tool, any CRM you pick is going to have a lot of the same features. And it's less about nailing the tool and much more about understanding what you want it to achieve, making sure you're staffed for it, and making sure that the data is traveling through each system the right way. So that's what Sage 70 helps with. When you actually want to build the thing, there are specialists to build that thing. There's folks here, right here at NTC, who I would recommend everyone talk to. Fracture is a great partner in this. Omatic, if you're in Razor's Edge, is another great partner for this. So there are folks out there who specialize in setting up your data warehouse, and it's a process I really, really recommend that you get expertise for. Start with strategy, though. Figure out what you're trying to do.
Right. What's our goal?
Yeah.
What's our purpose?
And which information do we need to raise the visibility of? Because one of the worst things that you can do is build a warehouse that lets you see everything and then try and look at everything. Yeah. You got to look at the five things that matter most.
All right. Well, what else are you going to talk about tomorrow?
Well, I think we're going to talk...
What's on the agenda?
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the different ways that vendors offer this kind of integration. So there are all-in-one vendors that offer you a lot of different tools under one roof. And that's great because it's easy to train staff in. You see familiar screens over and over again. The data on the back end is integrated. So they're really effective. However, you trade some flexibility. Right? You may prefer a different email tool, but the vendor doesn't have that.
They have an all-in-one.
So you have to stick with them. You might go with totally the opposite end of the spectrum. You might go with a platform, whether that's Salesforce or Dynamics. where you can build whatever you want on this kind of core foundation, and that gives you tremendous flexibility. You can build whatever you want. It also gives you a lot of cost and challenges your skills, because you can build anything if you have the money for it and the know-how. Should you build anything? That's usually a big question.
And then there's the maintenance of the custom build.
Right. And you have to budget not just for the maintenance, but here's the real tricky one. When you build a custom system, nobody can train you in it but you. So you have to now build a training capacity to continue supporting your system. This isn't, I'll say this over and over again. We spend too much time thinking about what it's going to cost us to buy our tech tools, to build our tech tools, to maintain our tech tools. We should be spending twice that much time thinking about how to acquire the right staff, how to retain them, and how to train them to use our tools. That's the hard part. I mean, so many people in nonprofits have tremendous passion and tremendous skill sets, but not often great technical skill sets. That's part of what a successful nonprofit needs to learn how to do, is embed strong skill sets in technology in their staff.
Yeah, and be willing to invest. You have to be invested in it, either through staff or outside help.
Right. I mean, you know the old joke, right? What happens if I spend all my money training my staff and then they leave? Well, what happens if you don't spend the money training your staff and they stay?
I haven't heard that joke. I don't know that one. I haven't heard that.
All right.
Okay, very good. Yeah.
I wish we had a laugh track.
You have an awful untrained... Yeah, I'm not sure it would have been too loud. But you have a good hearty laugh yourself. And that's all right. Okay, we still have another couple minutes together. What else are you going to... I don't know. Based on your session description, I feel like we've covered everything, but we can't have covered it all because we haven't spent 75 minutes together.
Well, we certainly haven't. I think that one of the tricks that you have to really ask yourself is, do I pursue a CRM-driven strategy? And this is something that I want every small nonprofit listening to think hard about. Because, I sat with a client once, and they were talking about how they wanted to put everything in a CRM, and what should we do? And I asked, how many donors do you have that you communicate with? And they said, 500. And I said, that's a wonderful number. You don't need a CRM. You need a telephone. 500 donors. Call two a day. Right? You're not at a point where you need the scale, and therefore you shouldn't hamper yourself with the, what a system is going to tie you to. There's another small nonprofit, smallish. I mean, we're talking about 30 employees, so not tiny. But 30 employees, a couple million dollars in revenue, and they are using Salesforce, which is, by the way, very, very challenging for small organizations to use effectively. But they had really the cleanest Salesforce implementation I've ever seen. Data was hygienic. It was kept well. They had a Salesforce admin on staff. They had another part-time Salesforce person who really did a great job of pushing all of their donor data and all of their program stuff into Salesforce. They were running every program out of Salesforce. And I kind of wanted to give them
I'm going to have a panel tomorrow about... Managing using a CRM to manage program.
Yeah, it's certainly part of the promise of Salesforce is that you can cross from donor to constituent to program participant, and they made it work.
However, there's a
big but lurking at the end of this one, which is that even though they were doing such a great job at that, whenever they wanted to spin up a new program, and they're young enough that they're still spinning up new programs and thinking of new ways to solve their problems, whenever they wanted to spin up a new program, they got stuck. They got stuck in a 6-month Salesforce development cycle. We have a new program. How are we going to administer it through Salesforce? We need to create new forms. We need to create new business logic. We need to test it, right? We need to go through the process of implementing this program into Salesforce. That's really slow.
Yeah.
So a small organization, one of its advantages is agility and flexibility. When you take on a bigger than your class system, you may sacrifice some of that agility. And our advice to them was not to get rid of Salesforce, right? Our advice to them was, and this is crazy, but our advice to them was, spend the first year of every program in Excel. And I know, right? I'm a tech consultant telling you Excel is good for things.
Create a spreadsheet for that, yeah.
But iterate rapidly. Be able to be flexible. Don't tie your data into hard relationships. Admittedly, you lose some of the benefits of structured data. It's true. But what you gain is the ability to figure out how it's going to work for real. And once you figure that out, and once you have some process maturity, right, and you figured out what the right way to do it is, then go to Salesforce, right? Then put it into your Salesforce. So that's something that I really want folks listening
like
to think about.
A lean startup principle.
That's right.
Start lean. You'll learn. You'll pivot if you need to. And then when you've got something that's a year old and proven, I mean, the program may not even take off.
Right.
You could spend more time in Salesforce development than the life of the program, conceivably.
Right.
So when you've got something that you know you're going to stick with and you know what data to capture, then spend your time and money on your Salesforce implementation.
Yeah, don't overbuild your infrastructure. I mean, it's the same idea as...
Not at the outset.
Certainly not at the outset. Yeah. It's that same idea that, you know, if you're going to build a public space and you want to know where to put the walkways... What do? You wait.
You wait.
You wait, and you see where people
walk.
Where
the path? Yes, yes.
So it's the same ideas. Figure out where you're going to get a lot of bang from your infrastructure investment. Where is it going to really pay off for you? And it's a little bit, I think, counter to how we sometimes think about this, where it's become so de facto that you're going to need a CRM and you need a CRM strategy. It's not clear to me that you need a CRM strategy. It's clear to me that if you want to keep track of your most important stakeholders, you're going to need a method for doing so. Yeah. And if you have enough of them, a CRM is probably the method.
Okay. Give us a wrap-up in solving the CRM plus email plus website equation.
Well, the first thing I should say is don't forget to carry the one.
Is there a solution to this equation?
Yeah, I think there is a solution to the equation. And it starts with understanding what your goals are. If you really do communicate to people, if you're an advocacy org and you really do a ton of emailing and a ton of segmentation and a ton of personalization, then yeah, you need your CRM and your email and your website to talk to one another. And just not just that, you need your social integrated and you need your P2P integrated and you need your text messaging. So yeah, that's your core business, is communicating effective segmented messaging in order to inspire actions. So it makes sense that you use that infrastructure. But that's not going to be the case for every nonprofit. So understand, visualize what advantage, what benefit you want out of this, and that'll help shape your investment, what you want into this. That's one. The second thing is you solve this problem with the right people more than you solve it with the right tools. Invest in the right people, whether that's advice from consultants or whether that's staff and their expertise and skills. That's where you're going to get the biggest force multiplier, the right people.
All right. Isaac Shalev. He is president at Sage 70. Helped us solve the CRM plus email plus website equation. I thank you very much. Thanks, Isaac.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be here.
Pleasure. And thank you for being with Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of 19NTC. All of our interviews at 19NTC are brought to you by our partners at ActBlue, free fundraising tools to help nonprofits make an impact. Thanks so much for being with us.
Next week. It's the week before the 450th show. If you missed any part of today's show, I beseech you, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Wegner CPAs, guiding you beyond the numbers, WegnerCPAs.com. By Cougar Mountain Software, Denali Fund is their complete accounting solution specifically for nonprofits. Tony.ma/Cougar Mountain for a free 60-day trial. And by Turn 2 Communications, full-service strategic communications and PR. turn-2.co. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is the line producer. The show's social media is by Shuzhen Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this music is by Scott Stein. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern at talkingalternative.com.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.